This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester here. Thanks for listening to us on KFH. Thanks for watching on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, listening to us on the Odyssey app, whenever and wherever that is. Lots of different ways to get in touch with the program. You can do it on all the different ways to do it. You can also just send us a message. And Max has texted me during the break, and I've got a request for Max. First, Max, I've been asked to give a Carolina Hurricanes game one preview tonight, taking on the Capitals. I'm going to need your help on that, Max. What are we thinking here? Who are you picking in this series?
Ovechkin, highly overrated.
Ooh.
But I, if I was commissioner of the NFL, under the NHL, there would be no team in Carolina, Dallas, Anaheim, Florida. But I don't know. I'd go with Washington.
Oh boy!
Just because
you're be a popular guy, Max. I got nothing. I don't know.
I'd go with Washington tonight.
I don't really like the Capitals. I don't know why.
I don't either.
I have no reason for that. So, I mean, yeah. There's that. That's all the analysis I got. And then you're texting me.
Are they home? No, Max, who's home? I don't know who's. Carolina's probably home.
Carolina's home tonight. Carolina's home. Sorry. No, Washington is home tonight. Carolina is the road team.
And I take Washington.
For this game one. So, you're texting me during the break. We're talking about the Celtics missing 45 threes. And what did you say? You said like the 86 and 87 Lakers or the 83-76ers would go undefeated. And
undefeated.
Max, have you been hanging out with Rick?
No, undefeated.
Rick, our great YouTube viewer.
Undefeated. Those three teams would go undefeated in today's NBA.
I've actually had this discussion with somebody.
Depending on the rules they play by, it would be how much they
win. There you go. There's the asterisk you need. Like, which era are they playing? Are you trying to take the 83-76ers and put them up against the, 2023 Celtics? Because 2023 Celtics would win that series.
No, they wouldn't. They would be destroyed.
Are you taking that Celtics team and going back in time to an era where they allowed guys to beat the hell out of each other? It's all relative, right? Like, which era are you playing in? Because if those older teams played in today's era, they'd get demolished because these teams would shoot them out of the gym. They'd shoot a million threes. Teams weren't three teams. Did we even have a three-point line yet in 1983?
Yes, they did. Come on now.
Barely.
I know you guys weren't born. I know you guys weren't born.
10 threes a game.
Listen,
right?
They'd pass the ball into McHale. All the guys would foul out within no time.
That's right. And so, because I heard this, I think it was Brandon Zinner, another host of the show here, when I brought up Brunson, I think we were talking about Jalen Brunson, and I was like, man, he seems to have like that Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant thing. And he was like, oh, Michael Jordan played against a bunch of nobodies. And I'm like, yeah, look, because that comes up when you talk about Jordan versus LeBron, like who did they play against? I do think LeBron has played in a more complete and a deeper NBA. But I also think it's impossible to say that because Jordan played with a bunch of guys who wanted to kill him every night. They wanted to take his head off. That was a game plan for a lot of people.
That was just Detroit.
So, like, when we have these discussions in the NBA, and I'm not sure, you could have the same kind of discussion in the NFL, right? How would, you know, Dick Butkus hold up in today's NFL or whatever you want to say? Like, there are transcendent players, sure, but, like, the rules change in all these sports. Other than baseball, where it hasn't really changed, right? It's pretty much the same. Guys throw harder. That's about it. The game hasn't really changed. I mean, golf, I suppose, Tommy, you could take guys and plant them into different eras.
Well, you have to take into account different equipment in both baseball and golf.
Well, you'd give Jack Nicklaus Scottie Scheffler's equipment, and Jack Nicklaus would win a whole bunch of events on tour if he was in his prime, right? His swing is...
I mean, Jack Nicklaus already won a bunch of events on tour in his prime.
You know what I'm saying? Pick another golfer, whatever it is. Gary Player, I don't know. Like, whoever was really good back then would still be really good with the same equipment. So, like, it's hard.
But then everybody else gets the same equipment, too. Like, it becomes relative, you know. So, Jack Nicklaus in golf won with his equipment in the same era that everybody else played with the same equipment. You know, Scottie Scheffler is winning with this equipment currently.
That's right.
And everybody else is playing with the same equipment, too, currently.
But the rules didn't change, right? The rules haven't changed. And so, like, when we talk about basketball especially, like, the rules are changing. Like, how can you, and football's the same way. Like, the rules are literally different than when these other guys played. So you can't, I don't know who would win these. I'd love to see it. But yeah, if you planted today's teams into 1983, they would get killed, figuratively and literally. But if you took those older teams and put them in today's NBA, they'd get run out of the gym.
No.
These dudes who are better athletes, who can all shoot threes, like, it's hard to say it. Like, I get it. Like, I'm going to guess Max prefers the style of the NBA in 1983. I probably prefer the style of the NBA in 1983. I would rather see a little more physicality and,
I think, you know, the, I mean, my opinion, I think structure. I think the NBA is borderline unwatchable until you get to this point in the season. And even then, you know, like, the Celtics missing 45 threes or whatever they did in the game last night. Nobody wants to watch that. I don't want to watch that. I'm not going to be like, man, I really got to turn on my TV because I'm going to watch the Celtics miss 45 threes in a game. Like, I'll pay more attention now that we're into the playoffs. You know, once we get into the conference finals, once we get into obviously the NBA finals, all of that, like, yeah, for sure. Like, I'll be paying that much more attention. But I don't ever sit down and think, what am I going to watch tonight? Oh, I'm going to watch the NBA in the regular season when I don't know 80% of the players on the floor because of stars aren't playing all the time, like, whatever. And it's just like jacking up shots left and right. I don't find that entertaining.
Yeah, it's a part of the problem. I think there's no doubt about it. It's part of the problem for a lot of people. It gets better in the postseason than it is in the regular season, I think. And again, it's just...
Yeah,
it's
last
just
night's
conjecture.
Celtics, like, example is, you know, that definitely, you know, makes
younger,
a lot of sense.
Younger people, though, that are in tune with that style of basketball are fine with it. It's the same in college. I mean, they're taking more three. They just shoot a much lower percentage. Like, they don't shoot them nearly as well in college, but they're taking a ton. It does beg the question, and I've heard this before, should they back up the three-point line again? I don't even know that that would help. The kind of range that guys have now, I don't even know that that's a deterrent. The problem is, it's the, you know, analytically and, like, stylistically, it's kind of the way you win games now. You a high volume of threes. Because guys have become such good shooters, like, that's the style that is conducive to winning. And okay, like, you call it the Steph Curry effect. You can call it whatever you want. it is what it is. I don't know what you can do to change it. Baseball ran into this same problem. The shift was hurting baseball. Like, it was hurting baseball. Baseball was in a bad, and they were able to fix it. I don't know what you could fix in basketball where you don't have 45 missed threes. We saw it was the Timberwolves missed 40 threes in a game. Like, that isn't good television. Like, we'd much rather see dudes dunking on each other and doing all that kind of stuff, which is a generation ago, it feels like now.
Here's an idea. Make an adjustment. You know, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be like we need
what
to.
What can you do? That's my question.
Not shoot threes, try to play.
But that's how you win games, though. That's like telling teams, well, don't shift, but the shift is helping them win games. Of course they're going to do it.
Would the Celtics have won the game if they had maybe moved away, made an adjustment in the second half with that strategy, and maybe tried to take fewer threes and actually try to convert?
I mean, Tommy, the Celtics more are the high percentage champions.
It seems like simple math to me. Higher percentage shots, if you make a handful more of those, and you're not just jacking up threes that you're missing left and right. Clearly, it wasn't their night shooting. I'm not saying that they're never going to make threes, but in that particular game, in game one, it's not working for you for whatever reason. Make an adjustment late in the game. Go for some higher percentage shots. You win the game if that's the case.
That's not what I mean. I'm not talking about a single game.
I'm talking about in the game last night. They missed 45 threes. Make an adjustment in the game. In that game, if you're the Celtics, make an adjustment, you win the game.
Totally. I don't disagree with that. I'm talking about what can basketball do where a team's not inclined to take 63?
I don't know. To be completely honest with you, I don't particularly care. Because I don't think that you can do a whole lot just in the way that the game is presented now. To where like that can get fixed. I guess I'm a pessimist in that regard. I don't think you're not going to roll the game back, right? Like that, you talked about golf. That's been an argument in golf, is they've rolled the golf ball back, you know, or that they're working on that. They're talking about that, like taking distance off the golf ball. So, you know, golfers are not able to hit it 500 yards and just, you know, shred up courses left and right. I don't exactly know. Unless you made the 3-point line at the half court line, I don't know if that's even, you know, realistic to even talk about in the NBA. I think the product that we have is the product that we're going to continue to have in the NBA.
I agree. And young people like it. The people that grew up on Steph like it. It's the style of basketball that they're used to. I get it. And that's where I was giving Max a hard time. Max's style that he grew up with happened, you know, a long, 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 long time ago.
They were still shooting the ball in peach buckets when.
That's right.
Peach baskets or that's whatever right. It was when Max was watching.
Max ran into Dr. James Naismith on the street one time. Yeah. All right, we'll come back. More Sports Daily. Felix Johnson, we'll talk a little football next.
Keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And that insider is Felix Johnson, Arrowhead Addict. Insider for the Kansas City Chiefs for us here on Sports Daily. Always appreciate that. Field Vision as well for the work for Felix. All right, Felix, the Chiefs talk, rookie camp. What are you watching the most with these rookies? Is it simple this time of year? Is it, does Josh Simmons work? Is he healthy? Like, is it that simple for what we should be looking for?
I think it is. I think particularly with when you look at what the Chiefs need moving forward. Like, again, we've talked about how they're probably going to be in the contenders race just because they're the Kansas City Chiefs and their quarterback is who he is. But at the same time, you need to protect that guy. And I think that they've done the things in the draft and free agency to move in that direction. And now it's just like, all right, can Josh start week one? And it depends on whether or not he can. I'm not sure. And they signed Moore in free agency and Thomas, trying to figure out whether or not they're going to start him and figure out what the case may be heading into the week one. But again, I think this is going to be a long-term situation where halfway through the season, I don't think the left tackle spot's going to be solved. It may not be as big of a problem as it was last year, but Josh Simmons seems to be the solution, but it may take him half the season because of injuries and he's a rookie.
How do you feel about, I know that, you know, we've seen some of these guys, you know, start to get some work and, you know, be able to start to get acclimated with the system and everything that Andy Reid implements there in Kansas City, specifically with a guy like Jalen Royals, you know, coming in and trying to compete for a wide receiver role on the team. I've seen some comps that, you know, he's a little bit Rashee Rice-esque in his game. How well do you think what he brings to the table can translate offensively to what Kansas City wants to do?
Well, I think it's kind of what Kansas City has tried to do with Rashee Rice and kind of even before him, is that the second time that Patrick Mahomes won the MVP, it wasn't these deep down the field throws. It was kind of this going back to the West Coast offense of these stick routes, these slant routes, these shorter routes. And then what can you do breaking off of that? Rashee Rice is a great yak receiver, and we'll see if Royals can fit into that realm too. So I think that's where the Chiefs are heading now, where it's like, all right, we'll get you the ball in a slant 5 yards off the ball, but break it for 15, 20 yards more or whatever the case may be. Obviously, they want to go deep down the field like you saw at the end of the Super Bowl a little bit too much too late. But at the same time, if you can get the easy yardage of get the ball into the playmaker's hands and move forward, I think Royals fits into that archetype, if you will.
We ran a scenario yesterday for the Chiefs on the offensive line. If there was a scenario where Jalen Moore looks good, and let's just say Simmons is healthy, do you think the Chiefs are willing and ready to make Juwan Taylor the third man in the rotation?
I think it's kind of hard to pay a guy $80 million over the course of...
What if he's the third best player?
And that very well might be the case, and trade him then. I mean, that's if he's worth $80 million to you, and he's probably worth, depending on where the tackle market is at that point in the season, trade him. I honestly, he's not worth the the dollar amount. And I mean, you saw last year when Christian Darrisaw went down for the Vikings, the Jags traded for, they traded for a Jags tackle and got him. And so, like, there's going to be a tackle market. Somebody's going to get hurt in the middle of the season. Juwan Taylor might be able to slot in for whomever that team is. And you have that in the middle of the season. If that is the case, I don't know if he's going to be the third best player. I'm not sure if Moore is going to be that guy or if Simmons is going to be healthy early enough. And so they may need Juwan Taylor to just be the right tackle. But at the same time, it's the most expensive third tackle in the game, if that's the case. And that won't last longer than this season if that were the case.
Let's talk tight end a little bit, Felix. One of the other notes from rookie camp is, you know, from an undrafted guy, Jake Briningstool, that the Chiefs signed, and they like him. They think he's impressive, and potentially, you know, battling for a backup role on this team. Apparently, he made, at least in day two of rookie camp the other day, made two of the top plays. That's according to Matt McMullen, who reports for the Kansas City Chiefs, and that the team really likes him. What do you know about him? Is he somebody that could legitimately make the team and could, you know, have some production for Kansas City?
I just think that tight end room is kind of full right now. Obviously, Travis Kelce at the top of it. Then Noah Gray had a solidifying performance. I think he's the heir apparent for whenever Travis Kelce retires, whether that's probably after this year. And then they've used draft capital on Jared Wiley, and I think that he's a guy that they're going to be looking at just to be like, all right, if this year doesn't work out, then we'll look at an undrafted free agent. And they're probably not going to keep four tight ends on the roster on opening day. He'll probably get a practice squad invitation or whatever the case may be. But at the same time, just about every year there's a tight end or a receiver that the Chiefs have that are like, oh snap, look at this guy. And then it's like, okay, he's going to get cut, Nico Remigio, or whatever the case may be. And I think that we're in May. We're looking for things to talk about. He's just going to be a guy that's either going to get cut or be on the practice squad. And, I mean, if this is the case where he's going to get play time and get some snaps and whatever the case may be, awesome. But I like to be a little realistic when it comes to undrafted free agents. Most of them aren't going to make the roster.
What about when the season starts? All right, we've got rookie camp, this early off-season work. Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider. So now we're talking veterans. We're kind of talking everybody. As we make our way through the summer and towards OTAs and all of these things, what are you looking for here? They brought everybody back. Mm-hmm. There really aren't that many questions for this team. So what should we be on the prowl for? Is it a redesigned offense with all the receivers healthy, maybe? I don't know.
I think hopefully we get a quiet offseason. If you remember last offseason after the Super Bowl, there were arrests and Rashee Rice. Like, there was so many different things going on. I think this year, and we've talked about it, where most of this secondary, most of the defense, and a lot of the offense, if you want to go that case, they haven't had any form of adversity. And this is the first shot at it, I guess, if you will, where they lost the Super Bowl by a giant margin. And like you said, there's not a ton of changes that they can make, and they haven't made any just because they've brought everybody back. And it makes sense too, if you can, a team that's been to the last three Super Bowls and won two of them. So it's hard to say, like, what are they going to change massively, because you can't really change things that grand. And so I think that there's only one team in the NFL that can beat the Chiefs the way the Eagles beat the Chiefs, and that's the Eagles. And so it's about trying to figure out how they can maximize this era right now. And right now, that's, they can make it to the AFC Championship game like they have the last 7 years. They can win the Super Bowl like they have two out of the last three with this current roster. It's about the little tweaks and the little changes that they're going to make. I'm not going to have a ton of worry about the Kansas City Chiefs unless they were to lose three or four games in a row like they did in 2023. So it's such a weird spot to be an analyst or whatever you want to say for the Chiefs, just because it's like, yeah, I know they're holding pattern, even though they need to make every change in the book as in regards to their last game. But at the same time, what changes do you make? You can't, because everybody's coming back and you're one of the best teams in the league.
The running back room, I find to be really fascinating for Kansas City, because I think that in an ideal world for the Chiefs, everything pans out and everything looks good in that room, where you've got Isaiah Pacheco as, your RB1, kind of your bell cow running back, and then he can get spelled by Kareem Hunt from time to time. Maybe Elijah Mitchell can have a little bit of a resurgence. And then we don't know a whole lot about Breshad Smith other than the fact that he's a really solid pass catcher out of the backfield. That's all well and good if everything goes according to plan. But if Isaiah Pacheco goes down with an injury, which we've seen happen multiple times, I don't really know what direction they go other than just completely abandoning the run game. Do you see any other kind of angle where they, you know, could say, hey, Pacheco, you're out for a while. This is going to be our backup plan, and it's going to be successful for them.
You know, it's kind of interesting that you talk about the running back position like it's a quarterback. Like that, you described everything there. Like if you would have said Patrick Mahomes' name instead of Isaiah Pacheco, it sounds like you'd be just as worried with the backup quarterback as you are with Kareem Hunt. And so it's like that across the NFL. You look at Saquon Barkley and the drop-off to his backup. Derrick Henry and the drop off to his backup. So it's the only position in the league, or the only other position other than quarterback, where there's only one on the field at a time. Sure, they get rotated in and out, but there's only one on the field at a time. Man, fullbacks are dead. But I think that we're kind of entering that spot where you kind of have to have that guy, where it's maybe not your Saquon Barkley or Derrick Henry, and you're not going to have Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen or whatever the case may be. But if you have your guy that's in there getting your 25-ish carries a game, that makes your offense run so much more smoothly, as you've seen this last year, just because you can run the ball, or at least have the commitment to it. And we've talked about how the Chiefs have run the ball, but just not as effectively. And so I think that it's about finding that guy. Is Isaiah Pacheco that guy? Hopefully. The injury is one of those things, and especially for a running back, it does have a little bit higher of a tax, if you will. So I think with Andy Reid, it's going to be whether or not he has Kareem Hunt in his prime, I guess, to go to. If he has a Brian Westbrook in his prime to go to, a Jamal Charles in his prime to go to. So it matters about – it's this dependency we have on this position, but the Chiefs are like, yeah, we'll kind of focus on these other things and what this position can do other than just running the football. And I'm excited to see what Pacheco looks like going into week one with a full, healthy offseason. I think he is that guy.
It's pretty interesting. As much as we've talked about the Chiefs, we have not talked much about the defense. The majority of the picks they made, what did they make? They made about 5 or 6 defensive picks in the draft. Those guys have a good chance to be contributors. Those guys are going to be pretty critical to what this team's able to do big picture. Is there a world where the defense gets better, maybe, or at least stays the same next year with some of these younger players being contributors?
Well, in a way, the front office and the defense kind of painted themselves into a corner where they had such a great draft a couple years ago. They have to draft basically the same positions and cross your fingers and hope that it does get better and have contributors moving forward. It's kind of hard to say that a defense as good as it was is going to get better because it was the Chiefs defense. I think it does get better, but the contributors that we've seen don't change that much because these are contract years. These are guys trying to get paid by the Chiefs or otherwise, whether it's, and I know we're not talking about secondary, but George Karloftis, there's the entire 2022 secondary. So I think that this defense gets better, but because of what it is already, not because of who's coming in.
I wonder on that note and, you know, really kind of dialing in a little bit more. I mean, the defensive front from Kansas City, I mean, we obviously know Chris Jones is a monster and always has been. But I was concerned going into the draft about the fact that, you know, they lost Eric Nnadi. They lost Turk Wharton. You know, they did sign Jerry Tillery, but he's a veteran. Mike Pinnell was really the only guy that, you know, had significant size, really as a nose tackle type player. But I feel like through the draft, through the guys that they were able to get early on, if nothing else, they're younger on the defensive front, and probably they'll be able to be quicker in that regard too.
Oh yeah, and that's hugely important. And Cody Alexander, our head of football operations over at Field Vision, and I were talking last week how there's kind of two separate rooms within defensive ends, not just your defensive line, where you have your more traditional edge rushers of like Myles Garrett. That's your defensive end. He looks like it. He fits the part. But then there's your Josh Sweats, where there's like 6'6", 250-ish, maybe like 230 more, but and they run a 4-4. And I think the Chiefs are kind of bent that way. Who was the guy that they traded Uche with the Patriots? And so I think they're kind of leaning that way from a Minnehua and certain things like that. But at the same time, I've always thought that the Chiefs could have had one of the best defensive lines in football, or like led the league in sacks for a year, or whatever the case may be, strictly because if Chris Jones wants to be the defensive player of the year, he can be. And now that George Karlaftis is in that in a realm of like, oh, he can get double-digit sacks, they have another guy that can rush the passer, and we can talk about the nuances of Karlaftis's play and all that good stuff. But now they have, like you're saying, they have all of this youth and hunger mixed in with this veteran presence of Chris Jones. It's one of my favorite things, and I said this about the Rams last year, where they have this nice combination of we know what to do, but also we have guys that can go do it. So it's the Chiefs trying to figure out we're letting all these veterans walk, your Noddies, your Turk Whartons, guys who have been around the organization for a long time, but also bringing in guys that have never been a part of this Super Bowl era, this window, if you will. So I think that's where the defensive line is on a smaller level, where it's they have guys that have been around for a minute, Chris Jones, George Karlaftis, that are at the top of the league, but bringing in guys that are hungry and still looking for success, I'm very excited for what the Chiefs defensive front can do this year.
Felix Johnson joining us, our Chiefs insider, obviously covering the NFL with Field Vision and a couple other places. A couple other things that I wanted to touch on. I saw you put a video out this morning, Caleb Williams. You said you're the only Caleb Williams guy in your office. I'm a Caleb Williams guy, so mm-hmm. Welcome to the club. I'm glad they got Ben Johnson there. I hope, you know, it's not too much instability, but I think the Bears have done a nice job. I still think the player's going to be good. What'd you take away from him in his first year?
Well, real quick, does everybody remember that there were two teams that were 2-2 after the first month of the season? The Chicago Bears and the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles just went on to win every other game. The Bears lost just about every other game. And even within that game of when they lost to the Commanders with the Hail Mary and everything, there was one team that scored two touchdowns in that game. It was the Bears, and they still lost. That's neither here nor there. I think that Caleb Williams, if Matt Eberflus was worth anything as a coach, they would have figured something out, because they brought in so much talent wide receiver-wise. Their defense was so good the previous year. If you manage Caleb Williams the right way, I guess, and that's the hardest thing to say, because you need a Ben Johnson. He fits the archetype-wise, because Caleb Williams is more like Patrick Mahomes. You kind of need Andy Reid to say, all right, I understand what you're doing, but we have to do it this way. And so hopefully I think that Ben Johnson is the right guy to say, all right, we can take all of Caleb Williams's Caleb Williamsness, if you will, but let's point it in this direction and angle it that way. And from a structural standpoint, I think the Bears have done the right thing. A twice fired head coach as your defensive coordinator, he's probably not getting an opportunity. A 28-year-old offensive coordinator, he's not going to get an opportunity for at least a couple years. Ben Johnson could have gotten a head coaching job in multiple cycles. They brought over a lot of the Lions offensive coaching staff. So take away from your rivals to add to yourself. We'll see there. So I think that there's a lot of potential still in Caleb Williams' favor. It's just that it's kind of like the Shador thing, where it's like he's got all this stuff around him and he is who he is. That doesn't excuse him from being a quality prospect, and in Caleb's case, a better prospect than Shador ever was.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. As much as I like Shador, mm-hmm. I like Caleb way, way more as a prospect. Well, we don't have time, unfortunately, so I'm going to give you another week to rethink and reset your take on Travis Hunter's ability to play two ways. So we'll have to table that.
You were the only person last week who got after me.
We'll have to table that another week, let you guys really think about why you wouldn't play a great player on both sides of the ball. But, you know, sorry, we're out of time.
Maybe 30 catches next year, maybe.
Felix Johnson, you'll find him at Felix R. Johnson on X. Find his work at Arrowhead Addict, Field Vision. Felix, we appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys.
Got a great email. We were talking about the NBA playoffs and all the threes, and the Celtics, you know, historically missed, you know, a ton of them last night in their game one. Dax emails the show, and his idea is to somehow, basically, more points are coming from corner threes because they're too close to the rim there, but there's no room on the court to extend that. So you know, he's saying push it out, but I don't know how that helps you. You can't like eliminate, I don't think, a corner three unless you do, right? You just eliminate the corner three, might be what Dax is suggesting. They're not going to do any of this stuff because I think some people are totally fine. But I go back and Tommy, you mentioned maybe change it up late, and I'm looking at like the play by play of the game. I watched the end of regulation, then flip back over to the Royals, then jump back in to the end of overtime in that game last night. It's step back 19 footer, step back 23 footer, missed, man. I'm like, God, that's just like, there was a time where we would have, like growing up, like you'd have been smacked for playing that kind. And then, you know, kind of the Steph Curry generation came through and they hit a ton of those shots.
At least Steph Curry's like, okay, making them, you know, like at least Steph Curry's hitting those shots. I think that's the thing. Like you can pin it on a guy like Steph Curry, who's maybe the best shooter ever to do it. And you're like, all right, well, like that influenced a whole generation, and it did, and all of that. But at least Steph Curry's hitting those shots. In the game last night, the Celtics didn't hit any of them. And that contributed, you know, directly contributed to them losing that game in overtime. And, you know, I know that you were like, well, that's the way that teams win games. And you're not wrong about that. But in that particular one game,
right.
Make an adjustment. Change it up.
We're talking about two different things.
Do something different. And if you do like a little bit different, if you don't settle for those shots that clearly your team just doesn't have it on that particular night, and that happens, then do something different and you win that game against the Knicks.
And it's not like the Celtics can't. They have a lot of players that can score.
Sometimes you have an off night and you got to have a backup plan.
Absolutely. And they're going to be fine in the series, and they won't go probably another game in this series where they miss 45 threes. And so can the Knicks keep up when they don't miss that many threes? Because the Celtics still almost won despite it. It is a challenge of basketball right now. It is the same sort of thing has happened. There's been conversations about college basketball and, you know, some of these guys don't take enough. How many times have we talked to Shreyas about the fact that KU doesn't take enough threes and in his mind and, you know, where the analytics are driving you these days. And like the reality is it does help teams win games. And so go full circle. You look at Wichita State and they brought in a young guy that can hit a bunch of threes. And you're like, awesome. They've needed that for a long, long time. So it's just become a part of basketball. And it's even, you know, they push it back in the NBA further than college, but one like defining trait of the NBA players now, 3-and-D, right? Can be a 3-and-D guy. Those guys have a ton of value. Can you shoot threes and be a good defender? So it's just the way basketball's changing, and there's nothing we can do about it, as Max waxes poetic about the 76 Celtics. Like, this is where basketball is now.
Yeah, you mentioned KU. A quick note. First off, Norm Roberts, longtime assistant coach for the Jayhawks, retires yesterday. So we're going to see a shakeup in the staff for Bill Self. It'll be interesting to see what direction they go. Will he go younger? Will he go, you know, more aggressive? Time will tell on that. And then something else college athletic related that just came down. I don't know if you saw this. Brett Yormark gets an extension. So all the Big 12 presidents agreed to extend his contract. And so he will be, I think it's a 5-year deal, according to Pete Thamel. And so Yormark solidified in to be the commissioner of the Big 12 long term.
I didn't see that. It seems like a no-brainer. Is there anybody out there that doesn't think Yormark has done a good job? He's been bold, right? He's made a lot of big swings, the court at the Big 12 tournament. He's done a lot of big things. I think that's the way you have to be, though, right? Like, they're not all going to work, but you have to swing big when you're the Big 12, because you're always going to be playing from behind the eight ball financially, at least until you're not. And that's, of course, the goal is to not be. But the reality is you probably always will be. So you've got to think bold. And he has. I mean, a lot of his ideas I've really, really liked. Some of them I haven't. But that's okay. I'm okay with the aggression. And because, you know, the alternative is Pac-12, right? The alternative is wherever we land with the ACC, if they don't do something bold whenever that time comes. And so, yeah, I'm good. I'm glad. I'm glad he wants to do the job for longer, because I think that kind of leadership is needed right now in college athletics.
Yeah, it's a 5-year deal. We'll run through 2030. So that came down this morning. And, you know, to your point, he's been very bold and very aggressive. And You know, some of the things I know he's, you know, people have kind of made fun of some of the decisions. Like you've got remember the agreement that he made with the WWE, and you had, you know, the Big 12 championship belt, you know, that came, like, just different things like that, that kind of people joke around about. But he's taking risks. He's taking big swings at things. And he's keeping the conference relevant. And so I think because of all of that, yeah, it makes a lot of sense to have him be extended.
And there's a timing component to it too. Like, you can be risky. You want TV networks to be in a good position to spend a bunch of money, which it's not the really the climate for that at the moment, but maybe it is a year from now. So I think he's been good with his short game, and I think he's been good with his long game too, in evaluating when it's time to push the right buttons. And he's been right, by the way. Like, he was right to be so bold with expansion and everything with the Big 12. I don't know if that same thing happens if he tried that now instead of when he tried it. People, and, you know, with revenue sharing and all the things that are coming, I think, you know, schools are probably a little less inclined maybe to make bold moves. We'll see. But again, I haven't heard anybody that covers and follows the Big 12 that has not been satisfied with the job.
Totally.
He's done.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, the job of a commissioner in one of these power conferences is to be as proactive as you possibly can be in an ever-evolving college athletics landscape. You have to be able to make deals. You have to be able to negotiate. You have to be able to advocate, and you have to do it proactively. And when you compare and contrast it to the guy that he replaced in the Big 12, who was very reactive and let Texas and Oklahoma walk, and basically told lawmakers that, you know, he didn't see a viability for this conference when Texas and Oklahoma left, and wanted their help to prevent things like that from happening. And then you flip, you know, and you look at what Brett Yormark has done and how aggressive and bold he has been. I mean, the guy very early on in his tenure famously said that the Big 12 is, quote, open for business. That's been his mantra the entire time. And, you know, so I think it's easy. All you have to do is compare him to his predecessor, and you recognize and understand how much of an asset he's been to the conference.
It is. I'm glad you saw that note. I didn't see that note. But Brett Yormark, we're glad you're around. Stick around for us. We need it here in the Big 12. Okay. So let's look ahead then, Tommy, to tonight for the Royals a little bit while we have just a couple minutes left in this segment. It should be even more advantageous. Shane Smith has been a good story. That's who pitched for the White Sox. I saw Jonathan India talking about him after the game, in that he was like, yeah, he had really good stuff. So they're not going to have that the rest of the way, though. They don't have bad starting pitching. It's not like awful, but it's not that good. You get Lugo tonight, Waka, Bubich, like the rotation. There's not a bad spot in the rotation, I guess, if you're the opposition. You want to face Lorenzen at this point, but he's even been good. They take the first one. They take down the best pitcher they'll face in that series. I think you just keep shrinking it down. Lugo, Waka, Bubich, let's win three more games here. I mean, you know, why not? If you're the Royals, it's going to take it. Detroit's not slowing down. Like, we just brushed over that earlier. Like, Detroit and Cleveland, we could be looking at a division here where you've got three teams that win 85 plus. And I think that's being conservative.
That's the way it was last season, right? I mean, Detroit came on strong towards the end. Cleveland, you know, it seemed like every time Kansas City won a game, Cleveland won a game last year. So this is nothing new for the Royals. They know what it's like to be in a division with these two teams. The Twins, you know, we'll see if they get healthy and if they're able to turn things around. But right now, it does look like mainly a three-horse race in that division, and the Twins would be the wild card. You know, so you've got to take advantage of games against bad opponents at home. You have to be able to do that. And they took the first game in the set. That's huge. Off to a great start in that regard. Just continue on, you know, this hot streak and keep playing the way that you're playing. Have elite pitching from your starters, have, you know, solid outings from your bullpen, and then do what you need to do to get three or four runs across the board, and you'll be in good shape.
Randy Jesse Early, a guy who blogs about the Royals, he put this out. This is wild. He just put this out. Here's a stat for you. The Royals have called up five pitchers this year, Tommy, from the minor leagues. Steven Cruz, Noah Cameron, Evan Sisk, Jonathan Boland, Taylor Clark. Those five guys have combined this year to throw 21 and two-thirds, no runs allowed, only seven hits. They're plentiful now. Can we be unreasonable baseball fans and just expect a sweep of the White Sox? Like, can we just do that on a Tuesday in early May? Why not?
I mean, the White Sox are bad, and the Royals are the hottest team in baseball. So, I mean, I don't think that's an unreasonable goal. I don't know if I want to call it an expectation at this point.
Let's make it an expectation.
To me, winning the series is a reasonable expectation. Three of four.
You have to win three to win the series. Yeah.
Well, I get that. But I mean, you know, 3 of 4, I think, is a reasonable expectation. Sweeping the series, of course, we would take that for sure. Like, that's, exceeding those expectations. That would be a goal for sure. But, you know, I mean, baseball's weird. I mean, you never know.
Let's be unreasonable.
Okay, fine. We'll be unreasonable.
They need to win the next three and score a combined 15 runs in those three games. How about that?
You think they're going to score average five a game?
No. I'm not saying I think they're going to. I'm saying that's an unreasonable expectation.
Okay, unreasonable. Reasonably, if they can take three of four from the White Sox and they average 12 runs a game, I think that's reasonable over the next
30. I do too. Because we haven't done this, we've been so focused on that stretch of the schedule. Boston, at Houston, at home then against St. Louis. They go on the road to San Francisco. Then they get road games against Minnesota. It's not anything like they saw earlier in the season.
It's not a cakewalk, though. I mean,
It's not like what they've had recently, but it's not like what they saw at the beginning of the year either.
Yeah.
So there's no reason, whether we're being reasonable or unreasonable or whatever, to think that, no, they're not going to win 10 out of every 12 games here, but they should be at least through that and be, you know, ready to roll. And this race is going to be so fun to watch. And if you're setting your clock to it and you're setting your calendar to it, the next games against those teams we talked about come at the end of the month against Detroit at Kauffman. There you go. There they are. They're right there for you. And that should be a lot of fun. All right. That's it for Sports Daily. Tommy Mike chimes in, said, didn't I bet that the Royals would score 20 runs yesterday? No, Mike, I did not bet that. That would be a bad bet. I said, I want them to. And so that means they've got 17 runs to go over the next three games. We'll see if they can get there. It's pretty unlikely based on what we're seeing. Our thanks to Felix Johnson for hopping in with us. Shreyas Lada, our KU insider, joins us tomorrow. For Max, for Tommy, I'm Jacob. We'll see you then.